My name is John Pugh, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank this committee for inviting me here. I want to thank these two speakers that I've heard before I have this privilege of standing here and tell you how very much I appreciate the simplicity of their talks. When I came to you people, I had an abrasive personality. My facial expression was a cross between a snarl and a frown. My vocabulary was laced with foul language, and I couldn't carry on a conversation because of fear and anger. And you people put up with me, and you allowed me to stay. And I don't know if that was love, but that was tolerance. And I know that love and tolerance are our code. And for that reason, and that reason only, I hope I will never forget what a privilege it is to be allowed to attend a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, much less be invited to stand here at the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous and tell you what happened and how it was and how very good it is today, because it is very, very good. I've got a few things here that I would like to read before I tell you a little bit about me, because they mean so much to me. It says, here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed. They flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, take a certain attitude toward that power, and to do certain simple things, there has been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of total failure of their human resources, they have found that a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. This happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. Once confused and baffled by the seeming futility of existence, they show the underlying reasons why they were making heavy going of life. Leaving aside the drink question, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. They show how the change came over them. When many hundreds of people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact of their lives, they present a powerful reason why one should have faith. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and to the people about us. I have been real serious about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous since I got here. And the reason, one of the reasons I have been so serious about Alcoholics Anonymous is when I got here, bourbon whiskey no longer worked in my life. I could not pick up a bottle of whiskey and forget about yesterday and dream about tomorrow. And when that happens, life becomes quite hard. And the book talks a little bit about that. And it says, you will reach a loneliness that few men know. You will be at the jumping off point. You will wish for the end. And there had not been a day that I can remember in the 3 years prior to June the 6th that the end, when I woke up that morning, that the end would not have been welcome. But that is not what God had in mind. And he allowed me to come to you people. And he allowed me to be able to sit here and take these 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and have this spiritual awakening, this revolutionary change in our way of thinking, and find this new way of life that many before me have found. And that is why today I am probably more serious about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous than when I came in here. Because you see, this is the best deal I've ever had. Bar none, this is the best deal I've ever had. If you would have saw me in 1973, and you would have seen that trophy wife and those two All-American kids and that home by Westboro Country Club and those two new cars and that executive position with McDonnell Douglas Aircraft, you would have said, that young man has it made. And if you would have asked me, I would have told you I had it made. But you see, I was drinking bourbon whiskey to make me feel good. And if you're drinking bourbon whiskey, or you're putting something in your system to feel good, you probably don't. And you probably don't have it made. One of the things that I have asked God to do before Nancy and I came down here this evening was to not get cute from the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I do not believe that this is a cute disease. I believe that this book of Alcoholics Anonymous describes this far better than anything I have ever seen, and it calls this disease a fatal malady. And I have seen far more die from the disease of alcoholism than I have seen recover. We have some people in St. Louis, and I don't know where you, how about your fellows, your ladies and your meetings, that get cute from the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous. They get up here and they say things like, I don't know how it works, but it really does. Folks, if you don't know how it works, you probably shouldn't be standing on the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I have known how it works since I've been here 6 months. There's only one message in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's also the greatest promise in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. It's the only message we have. There's only one path in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that book says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has followed our path. I don't believe that you can thoroughly follow our path if your party's not over. If you can still pick up a drink or a drug, and you can forget about yesterday and dream about tomorrow, you're probably going to experience what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous calls the delusion of alcoholism, that someday, some way, somehow, you can drink as a gentleman or as a gentlewoman. And if you're alcoholic, that won't happen. But I see a lot of people that look back and look down on alcoholics and come to meetings of alcoholism, Alcoholics Anonymous, and go back out and drink or drug. Folks, I've been here just long enough to realize that the most important drink or the most important drug you will ever take in your entire life is the last one. I have come to believe that those things that we are so reluctant to tell in the fifth step of Alcoholics Anonymous are the most important things that we did. Because this book talks about that incomprehensible moral degeneration. And you can't come and stay at the tables of Alcoholics Anonymous if you have greater than zero self-esteem. And most of us that are the most grateful for this program had minus self-esteem. I have not been here a long time. I have a sobriety date of June the 7th, 1984. I have a home group that meets in St. Louis on Tuesday night. If you're ever in town, please stop by. We don't do anything but Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a sponsor, Jim Irby, who has a sponsor, and I think that's terribly important, because between the three of us, we don't have much time, but we've got 50 years, and 50 years of recovery seen through three sets of eyes is a whole lot of experience. I don't know when I took my first drink of alcohol, but it was somewhere around 13. Because from where I come from, you were a full-grown man at 15, and you were responsible for your actions. I do know why I took my first drink of alcohol, and it was for the same reason that I smoked my first cigarette. Because that's what the big boys on the farm did. Was they smoked Lucky Strike and Chesterfield cigarettes. They drank Stag beer and Old Crow whiskey. They had fast cars, and they had jobs, and they had women. And I thought that was a wonderful lifestyle. And I chased that for 30 years. And not one time in that entire 30 years did I have all five of those things at the same time. But I gave it a real alcoholic ride. I did not drink much in high school. I was into sports and work. I drank a whole lot in college. And I drank a whole lot more in the military. And when I came out of the United States Army as a first sergeant in 1962, from that date until June the 6th, 1984, I drank alcohol on a daily basis in increasing quantities. And the only time I did not drink alcohol was when I was in a treatment center, when I was in a jail, or when the heat was on from the first two. I came out, I got married, I got a job with McDonnell Douglas Aircraft. I was at the right time and the right place. I was young, I was educated, I was presentable. I had some leadership ability, and I certainly knew from the farm how to work hard. And I had a career that was very similar to a lot of you people in Alcoholics Anonymous. It was that of a rising star. And everything that was good that could possibly happen to one of God's kids happened to me. And every time I got a promotion or every time I got a raise, my ego increased, and when my ego increased, my drinking increased. And I had a war cry back in those days, and it was, I work hard, and I deserve to drink. And I told that to everybody. I told that to my family. I told that to my employees. I told that to my bosses. I told that to my friends. But you see, this is a progressive disease, and things change. And in 1977, they called me in and they said, Mr. Pugh, they said, you are an excellent manager, but your behavior is unpredictable and it's unsatisfactory, and we think that we need to let you go. And I looked across the table at that vice president, and I said, do you mean to tell me that just because I slapped that union chief steward, that you think that you can let me go? I said, you must be kidding. I said, I quit. In 1979, I was sitting across the kitchen table from my wife. And she said, JT, she said, the kids and I can't live like this any longer. I said, you'll have to go. And I said, Kay, that's okay. I said, you're financially all right. The kids will be all right. And I said, I'll finally get to do what I always wanted to do. Now, I didn't know what that was. But it was very shortly after that that God came back in my life, and he said, tell you what, JT, he said, we'll do you real good favor. We'll let you drink full time. And I hit the streets of St. Louis, and I was out there 4 years. Now, I want to tell you something. There's people sitting out here tonight that don't think you can make the streets. If you'll let your bourbon whiskey and you push this disease, whatever you use, and God is unkind enough to let you keep breathing in and out, you can reach the streets. They're not hard. See, I still get that privilege of every once in a while going out to those streets. Somebody's mama or somebody's sister from the past will call. And I'll go out there, and here's these pretty young things, male and female, and they're selling their ass. And you catch them when they're straight. And they'll tell you universally, I didn't think it could happen to me. I didn't think it could happen to me. And that's as low as it goes, folks. That's as low as it goes. Because, see, I lost my soul on the streets of St. Louis. 5 and a half sell my ass. Things got pretty tough. Police back then weren't near as kind and nice as they are today. I had about 3 stories when I come to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous until I got about 8 years in here and found out I only had one. I used to tell people when I came in here that the reason I moved from the city to the county was I didn't want my mama to know that I died from violence. And that wasn't the truth. The reason I moved from the city to the county of St. Louis is I didn't want to die from violence. I was scared to death dying, and I was scared to death living. I'd seen too many people die. I'd seen them die from guns, and I'd seen them die from knives. And the one I was most scared of, I'd seen him die from being beat to death. And all that alcohol and everything that tears up your inside and bleed. And on November the 6th, 1984, I woke up in Maplewood Park, and I'd been living over there for about 6 months. And I don't think that the 6th of June was any different than any other day it had been for the past 4 years. I know that I had to have been drunk that day. I know that the odds are that either that day or the day before I'd been in jail or got out of jail, because that's what they did. But I know I heard God say that morning, "JT, you're through with alcohol." I have never had a compulsion for a drink of alcohol from that day to this. I have had those normal feelings about alcohol, of where I have passed by some spot where I've had a lot of good times, and where the whiskey and the beer has flowed well. And that thought has crossed my mind: wouldn't a cold glass of beer and two fingers of Jack Daniels taste good? And I immediately say, you bet it would. But you see, the price is too high. The price is too high. Not only do I have to give up the best thing that I ever had, but I'd have to give up you people. Because you see, if you have a mouth on you like I got on me, and you've been going around for all of these years telling people how to do this sober AA type thing, and you pick up a drink, hell, I couldn't come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't even think I could switch states. I went to my last treatment center, and I went to Harris House, which is a recovery house in St. Louis, Missouri. So I had gone from a college graduate, father of two, executive with McDonnell Douglas, to a hopeless, helpless drunk who spent 4 years on the streets of St. Louis. I stopped counting treatment centers at 10. I have no idea how many jails I've been in or how many hundreds of nights I've spent there. I have been shot at, I have been stabbed, I have been sentenced to 2 years in prison. I have been there, done that, and bought the t-shirt. So you don't need to tell me about the depths of alcoholism, because I have either experienced them or I believe in the reality of how far you can go if you push this disease and God is unkind enough to let you keep breathing. Because I have met people that have gone far lower than I have. And this program of Alcoholics Anonymous has saved them through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Harris House did a couple of things for me. They put discipline back in my life. And this book says we are undisciplined people. And if you add the gun, and you add the thief, and you add the street, I was undisciplined. You know, I wasn't out on that street but about 1 year. And I had one of those truly alcoholic thoughts that many of us have had. I thought, you know, I don't think this is any place for a 40-year-old college graduate to be. And it was about that time that I strapped that gun on, because I was so scared. I went from being sick to being bad, and it didn't take any time. And I carried that fear with me into the first 2 years of sobriety. And I carried that gun every place I went, except into the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was truly one of their true gifts of sponsorship and God, when I was able to give that pistol away to the St. Louis Police Department and let the money go to charity. I have been blessed with sponsorship since I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have never had anything but first-class sponsorship. And the first three sponsors I have died from the disease of cancer. And it has always been one of my most sincere thoughts that I hope that God does not have that in mind with me. Because I have no idea whether I am man enough or have the spiritual foundation that these three men had to die with dignity. I do not think there is any other way to show the spiritual foundation that we can build in this program than the way we conduct ourselves in dying. We took these 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous according to the schedule that's back on page 569 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says what has been accomplished in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. I took these steps in 60 days. My babies take these steps in 60 days. We have found that in our case, that when people come to the tables of Alcoholics Anonymous, that it is the very height of your willingness. And we need to have you experience this revolutionary change while you're still willing. Because gee whiz, folks, life gets awful good just by taking the alcohol and the drugs out of it. And then it gets awful bad when you get irritable, restless, and discontented. We have never done this thing any other way than the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsors have always emphasized praying on your knees every morning and every night. We've always emphasized that this is a program of living. The thing that has meant the most to me is when we take these steps of 3 and 6 and 7 and 10 and 11 at the base of our recovery, because you see those steps are all about behavior. And that 12th step of Alcoholics Anonymous says to practice these principles in all of our affairs. To practice these principles in all of our affairs. And I was told that meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous don't count. And workshops of Alcoholics Anonymous don't count. And conventions of Alcoholics Anonymous don't count. Because Bill Hall used to tell me, "Pew, you're such a con man that you could fool anybody for an hour and a half or 3 hours or a weekend." And he said, "You need to keep your mouth shut and not let these people know how sick you are." Now, that's one of the things that I was told at the very beginning of this thing was that Bill used to say, "I hope that you know when you get up every morning that you're sick. And I hope that there is not a day that comes in your recovery when you think you're well." Because he said, if you meet people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that think they're well, stay away from them. Because they're as sick as you can possibly get in sobriety. And I have found that to be very good advice. I want to talk a little bit about the things that have happened to me in recovery, because I think that by far those are the most important things that have happened My children came back to me after I was sober about 2 years. I have a daughter that's just exactly like me. She's a soft-spoken, sweet, young thing. She called me on the telephone and she said, "Daddy," she said, "I've had some people watching you, and they tell me you might stay sober this time." She said, "Why don't you come down to Houston and visit Clay and I?" They hadn't spoke to me in 6 years. I didn't have nothing to do with that. That was the power of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the power of this God of my own understanding. See, that's the greatest gift that I have ever received from Alcoholics Anonymous, was you folks gave me a God of my own understanding. And that is what that big book says. It says the main purpose of this book is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself. You see, I had a God when I came here, but He did me absolutely no good because He was not my God. And that book said at the very beginning, it says, lack of power, that is our dilemma. And you folks gave me this God and this power. So I have always known what came first, Alcoholics Anonymous, and God came second. I truly believe that this program is divinely inspired. I have no question in the world with that. But I know one thing. Until you gave Him to me, He couldn't work in my life. And these things kept happening to me. And a year later, my boy called me from Houston, and he said, "Daddy," he said, "I'd like to finish my education at Washington University in St. Louis. But," he said, "Mom and I don't have enough money. And we wonder if you could help us a little bit." And I said, "I don't know." I said, "Why don't you and your mama figure out how much money you need and call me back?" And he said, "Okay." And as soon as he hung up that phone, I called my sponsor. And I said, "Charlie," I said, "that boy called me. I said, he wants money for his education." And Charlie says, "How much child support did you pay, Pew?" I said, "I didn't pay any." I said, "That was part of the deal." He said, "That's not what I asked you." He said, "How much alimony did you pay?" I said, "I didn't pay any." He said, "That was the part of the agreement." He said, "That's not what I asked you either." He said, "How much were you making when you came to Alcoholics Anonymous?" I said, "I don't know, $10,000 or $11,000 a year." He said, "How much are you making now?" I said, "Around $30,000. He said, "Step the plate, you're in Alcoholics Anonymous." He hung up. Now that's the kind of sponsorship I've had since I come to AA. I ain't never had one of them that was the least bit afraid of hurting my feelings. Clay called back that next day and he said, "Daddy," he said, "I need $7,000 a year." And he said, "I know you don't have that kind of money." And I said, "No, I don't. But," I said, "can I write you a check?" And I wrote him a check for $900 a month for 8 months, a year for 5 years, and I got invited to his graduation with a master's degree from Rice University. And I didn't have nothing to do with it. That was programmed by Alcoholics Anonymous and the power of God. And the next year I got invited to his wedding. And it was a society wedding. And I'm a society person. And I was sitting down there in that Ann Arbor, Michigan. And I was sitting down there at the front of that society church, and I was with my ex-wife, and I told Kay, I said, "You know, Kay," I said, "you've done a wonderful job of raising these kids. I said, you only made one mistake." And she said, "What's that, JT?" I said, "You kicked me out 5 years too late." I said, "I wouldn't have put up with my behavior for 30 days. And you put up with my behavior for 17 years. And I was able to stand in that reception line at that country club that night and shake 300 or 400 hands and never have to go get a drink and never have to go get a smoke. And I was able to be an example of what the grace of God can do through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't have anything to do with that. That was a program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the power of God. And then the really great things started to happen. 4 years ago, I got a call in the middle of the night. It was my ex-wife. And she said, "JT," she said, "my daddy's died." And she said, "My mom would like to have him buried back in Missouri. And can you make the arrangements?" I said, "Yeah, okay, I can do that." I got that body in from Houston, and I got him out there in this little country funeral parlor. And I went in there the next morning to make sure everything was okay. And my mother-in-law was sitting up there by the casket. I went back there in that back corner of that room, and I hid. And pretty soon she knew somebody else was there, and she motioned for me to come up, and I did, and I said, "Jerry," I said, "I'm sure sorry to hear about Cliff." She said, "Well, Cliff's better off," but she said, "I really appreciate you make these arrangements and getting Cliff back here to Missouri." She said, "I wonder if you'd be a pallbearer for Cliff." And folks, my world stopped. You see, this was a woman that hated me. She firmly believed that I had deserted her only child and her only grandchildren. This was a woman that prayed daily for 10 years. That bad things would happen to me, and had never prayed before I left Kay. This was a woman that got a restraining order not only against me and my ex-wife and my children, but got them for two entire cities, Webster Groves, Missouri, and Kirkwood, Missouri. And the only reason they gave her those restraining orders was her hate was so great, she showed up every day at City Hall until I gave it to her. This was a lady that when I went to make an amend to her when I was 2 years sober, that spit at me. This was a woman that's husband went out in the backyard rather than speak to me. This was a woman that asked me to be a pallbearer. I didn't have nothing to do with that. That was the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the power of God. And then the greatest thing that has ever happened to me, as far as recovery goes, happened about 2 weeks later. And Kay called me and she said, I don't know what to do. She said, I got Mama back home here to Houston and she went to bed and she won't eat and she won't talk. And I don't know what to do. I said, let her go. Let her go. She's had a long life. She's had a hard life. All she wants to do is be with her husband, be with her daddy. Let her go. And about 3 weeks later, Kay called and said, Mama's dead. Would you make arrangements? And I made those arrangements, and Kay and I were standing on top of this little cemetery above the Merrimack River in Jefferson County. And the kids and the few relatives that were still alive had gone on back to that car. And she turned to me and she gave me a hug. And she said, the slate's clean. I said, I love you. Folks, it don't get no better than that. You don't ever get no better. Because you see, there's a little story. It's about a fellow that I admire in Alcoholics Anonymous by the name of Chamberlain. And Chuck was one of those fellows that I really do truly admire in AA, and I don't have no heroes in AA, I can tell you that. I've got people that I admire, and I got people that I respect. And I've got people that I watch, and I do as they do, and my sponsor happens to be one of those. But Chuck was giving a talk down at a little convention like this down in Texas. And when he finished up and everybody was down here after all the clapping and that kind of nonsense, and they're all standing around down here and they were congratulating each other and telling how wonderful this sobriety is, and how about this big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and about these that other book. And there was this little young kid grabbed a hold of Chamberlain's coat. And he said, Chuck, he said, I don't know what to do. He said, you folks are real, real smart people. And he said, I hear you talking about this book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, I hear you talking about this other book. And he said, I hear you talking about this God you got. And he said, I'm not very smart. He said, I can't read and write. He said, what am I supposed to do? And when Chamberlain could talk again, he said to this kid, and I say to you, he said, don't read no books. He said, do the simple things that this program of Alcoholics Anonymous tells you to do, and you'll feel good, and good things will happen in your life. 2 years ago, I was speaking at a little convention over here at Five Corners at Sykeston. And I wasn't paying any attention to anything. You see, when I was about 5 years sober, I knew everything there was to know about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know there's none of you that did that. My problem was I went around and told all these old-timers I knew about it. And that waiter brought me a check, and fortunately I did not, that check did not make me go out and drink again, but what that thing did to me, it bruised my ego so bad that I was able to learn from that. And about that time, I also decided that since I was Mr. Alcoholics Anonymous, that I should have a Mrs. Alcoholics Anonymous. And since I was on my timetable instead of God's timetable, that didn't work out so well. In fact, she started drinking 30 days after we got married. So I'd grown a little bit in that next 7 or 8 years, and so I wasn't looking for a relationship. I was looking to do this A of A thing and be a good son and a good employee and a good employer. And I finished that talk, and one of my babies came up to me and said, "You know, there goes that gal that you've made 2 trips down to see that was having so much trouble." And so I went over and I told her how this program of Alcoholics Anonymous worked. And that lady today, my wife. And that's the greatest gift that I have received in recovery. There is a story in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous where Bill Wilson is giving a talk. And when this talk is over, a newcomer comes up to him at the podium and says, "Bill," he says, "I know I can't drink anymore, it don't work. But am I to be resigned to a life of glum and boring like some righteous people I see? Or do you have a suitable substitute?" And I can see Bill Wilson grinning from ear to ear. And he says, "Yes, we have a suitable substitute, and it is vastly more than that. It is a fellowship in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. So I will close with this. If you will do as I did, if you will do as the 2 million before me have done, if you will take these 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous according to the directions of the first 164 pages of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, if you have this spiritual awakening sufficient to deal with life, we will grant you one of the top 5 promises in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. I like being sober. Thanks a lot."